Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
Last night, I turned on a television program on the cable, PAX, which I think is a word, a Christian word for peace, I'm not sure. And as I was getting ready to leave it, it was just coming on, this particular program, and it turned out that the program that was going to be on, it's called Faith Under Fire. And it said that there was going to be a debate between this rather famous doctor of an Indian descent, who's one of the world leading authorities in quotes on spirituality, and some other fellow who was the representative of some Christian group, well known. I thought, well, I think I have to watch some of this to see what happens. Sigh. What I watched, because I couldn't watch much of it, were two men sound asleep, both doing what they accused the other of being. The right wing, and I think that's the appropriate word, the right-wing conservative Christian individual, was a secretly seething pot of principles and concepts that he could only turn to in his mind to try to overcome his antagonist. And his antagonist was always on the defense, essentially, saying things like, God is infinity. Everything is beautiful. There's no problems. It's all one thing. I'm not defending myself. And they fought. They fought. Now, to the credit of the doctor, he was terribly, terribly asleep, but his heart is not yet gone. The Christian person was the antithesis of the very thing he spoke about. But to the point of my talk today, is that these individuals could only speak at each other using concept as weapons. Each was trying to win a victory for their understanding of truth. Now, to the world, it may have seemed quite intelligent. And I'm sure on one side, on the right, you had all the Christians saying, yeah, get him, you know, hit him with, go to Matthew 13:12 or whatever it is, you know. You could just see it. You see the workings. That's all this man had, was this incredible, and it's really proper, a vicious conviction. And the reason it's a vicious conviction is because anything that didn't fit into it was damned. And this is from the mouth of the man who, as a representative of the God of love, couldn't see his own enmity towards someone who didn't embrace what he did. And the other fellow gave all the stock, every stock possible thing that could be said. You mean that whoever you are, if you've never heard of Christ, you're going, now I'm in, and I am an Irish, and I am an Irish doctor. You know, you're damned if you, and this, and then the fellow said, well, look, you know, there's consequences. Just because you don't know the truth doesn't mean there's not consequences. And they went back and forth, and not one of them had any understanding. None. Now, I'm going to show you some things, which is what, if anything, might have been done last night. There's a very strange story in the New Testament. I think it's maybe one of the most strange stories in the New Testament. But I'm not going to talk to you about the story in terms of concept. I'm going to invite you to see, while I'm talking about it, the truth of it. So that rather than being at odds with one another about something that was historical, because you see, on the one side you got this fellow, he's just pure history. Pure historical blathering about principles and how they are the thing. While his relationship to them was as a man wielding a club. And on the other side, you have a man who was willing to be uncertain. He even said it. He said the difference between, and I won't do the deal because it's going to come out like a Scottish person. You know, he says that I'm willing to be uncertain and you're not. And then the fellow on the right called him, he said, that's very disingenuous of you. And anytime you use a word like that, you know you're in trouble. Half the watching public suddenly turns off the tube. Now, here's the strange story, and now I want to do what they were unable to do, and I'm asking you to do it with me. I want to take it out of time. It's not historical. See, that's the difference. The truth is not historical. It's not a concept. But a man, a woman asleep to themselves can only meet what they call the truth through their ideology, through that which they address that truth through. And that's always historical, whether it's their personal experience from 2 days ago with a revelation that they call back on to defend themselves, or 2,000 years ago. It's the same action. And all conviction like that is predicated on a position is a form of violence. Because I must defend something unseen, that what I'm defending is the sense of myself that I've derived from the image. So here's the strange story, the strangest, I think, and I'm going to explain it to you. And then I have a story to tell you of my own, and then an explanation, and by that time we'll say it talks over. Take a deep breath, please. Won't you work for yourself? Won't you work for yourself? The strange story has to do with the culmination in all the Gospels, as given anyway, where Christ has been delivered up to the Romans. And at the point that I'm going to bring it in so that you understand this and why it's not, why it may have been historical, but it makes no difference in truth. Because the whole thing has to, there's so many elements And this doctor, he even threw that into the conversation last night. He's talking about how in 319 there was the gathering of all the various popes, and because it was the political thing to do, they adapted the Bible as so forth and so on, and they changed it according to their precepts, and that there's been 19 iterations up and through the King James Version. Of this text. And so he's throwing all this, and the other guy's throwing it, like just watching guys throw bombs back and forth to each other, because that was all they could talk about. Christ is brought before Pilate, and Pilate says, look, I'm going to have to do you in, man. From whence come you? Meaning, what are you? Tell me about yourself. And Christ did not answer. Christ did not answer. Now, the reason that Christ didn't answer is because the truth is not defendable. The truth is not defendable because it has no position. And the reason it has no position is because it's alive. It's not a thing. It's not a set of doctrines. It's not a place. It's not a time. It is a living convergence of dynamic divine forces. How's that for a sentence? And because it is a living convergence of divine forces, there is no point at which in that there is anything other than its expression moment to moment to moment. That's all there is its expression. And its expression is not something that is crystallized. It is not fermented, meaning that it isn't put into some form. It is what it is. And to the point of why he didn't defend himself is because that living intelligence will not fight.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
It will not fight, but now I have to put this in. Yet, under the right circumstances, it will explain itself as best as can be explained to those who have ears to hear it. Which is not fighting, but expressing. And Christ understood completely for several reasons. And this is, I'm telling you, this is, I am explaining to you what is supposed to happen in each and every one of our hearts every moment of the day. He understood that that intelligence, that light, now listen carefully, that in that moment, the only action for it to take was to be silent in front of its attacker. Because to do anything to defend itself would limit what it is and what it can do. And here's what it can do. And this is what befuddles the humanity, because no one will do for themselves it. Its only true power And the reason it exists is to give itself to its attacker. The ultimate Trojan horse. That's what the light is. The ultimate Trojan horse. The seed that yields itself to the darkness, so that in entering the darkness that takes it in and that it gives itself to, the darkness is changed by the light that has come into it. And that's it turns out, unfortunately, or fortunately as the case may be, it turns out that here you have over 2,000 years, this long, painful, hideous aberration of a beautiful, powerful principle enacted by an individual some 2,000 years ago that stood as a prime example of what a person was intended to do in every moment of their own inner life. Have you not been brought before Pilate? You know, who are you, man? Don't you see what you just did? Who are you? But unlike that light that we're discussing, we always answer, don't we? Always da 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 da, dancing around, trying to figure out how to make Pilate pleased. Oh, I wish I could let you see that act did not occur 2,000 years ago as a separate expression of a time never to come again, but it is a timelessness that is always present, in which the act is an eternal possibility right now. And if you can even hear a little bit of it, and I know we're a little bit high, right? It'll come down a little bit in a minute, but if you can hear any of it, that means that the person that is actively attentive, if the person is actually in that moment, because do you understand that this moment, right here, not on my desk, that this moment right now is really the same moment as it was 2,000 years ago. That's what we don't understand. Because our mind sees time as a little thing moving along on a road, you know, time moving along. We see everything like that. But we also can see, if we even use our intellect properly, and we don't even need to use that too much anymore, unfortunately, because we have people around us, physicists, who are discovering for themselves and passing along the information, that world that we say is the actual world of time isn't really a world at all, other than a sort of a hallucination of another world. That time, as we understand it, only exists relative to that which measures movement. And in the whole of something, there is nothing measuring movement. It's just part of it. So here's this beautiful case at all levels, emotionally, intellectually, all the possibilities placed before a human being to look and see whether or not what they do on a day-to-day basis makes any sense at all. And what do we do on a day-to-day basis? That's what the story is about. Take a deep breath. Here's the story. Once upon a time of darkness in a kingdom far, far away, it was ruled by a very dark and black magician. And in this kingdom, everybody was there. Mom, dad, I mean, it was a world. And the hero of our story, who we will meet in a moment, he was like everybody else in this world, and he was doing all that he could to be free. He wanted, what did he want? He wanted to wake up without a heavy heart. He wanted to go to bed without a worry. He wanted to not hurt his family and friends by his demeanor, let alone his actual expression. He wanted to have security. He wanted to have a job and make enough money to be able to take care of what he wanted to take care of. He wanted peace in the world that he was in. But for as long as he knew, generationally, then none of that ever existed. His parents didn't have it. His parents told him what to do to have what they didn't have. And he thought, well, that's as good a source as any. And to give you an idea of what the life of this man was like, which is the life of all the people on that world, and please do remember that in a story like this, we's talking about you. One day he was standing in front of the counter at a department store, and he wanted to order something. And when he was standing there ordering it, he was still really upset by what happened to him in the parking lot. They have cars on this world too. And as he's sitting there, the fellow that was supposed to wait on him just didn't give him the proper respect. And a minute later, out of him came a sort of vicious assault. Not too out there, but enough that he knew, that the pharmacist knew, that he was attacking him. And the minute that he expressed this viciousness towards the pharmacist, he was instantly standing between two big, burly guards. Huge, big. You've seen these big fellows, big, burly guards. And they looked at him. He looked at them, and he knew what had happened. And instantaneously, they were transported to the kingdom where the hall of the king was. And he was brought before the king with the two big, burly guards. And the king looked at him. He gave him a certain glare. And he said, "Off with his head." Like that. Off with his head. And the man is, "No, no, please let me keep my head. I'm going to do better. You'll see." And he started telling and explaining to that dark king why he did what he did. You know, the parking lot. There was a really bad man in the parking lot. If I would never have done what I did if it hadn't have been the way that fellow cut me off, zipped into my parking place. And besides which, I've been reading books on anger management. And he goes on and he tells the king all the things, why he wasn't to blame. And then he tells the king, "And look, if you let me live, I'm going to be a good guy. I am. You'll see if you just spare the sentence, oh mighty one, because I can't. How will I learn? I'm learning. Can't you see I'm learning, oh great king?" The king looked at him. And he said, "Sentence stayed." And in that moment, come here, Bill. In that moment, the man was transported right out of the hall and to the place where his next plan was to unfold in order for him to perfect himself so that he didn't have to be brought in front of the king again. About 10 days from that time he was sitting there working out the plans that he needed to succeed at in order to please the king who was going to take his head, when something happened to his plan. And when something happened to his plan, he started to fall into a depression. As soon as he fell into a depression, suddenly there were two big burly guards next to him. And he looked at them, they looked at him, and they were transported off to the king's hall again. And he stood in front of the king, and two ministers leaned over and whispered into the king's ear. And the man knew exactly, he knew exactly what the ministers were recommending. By the way, do you ever hear that in your own head? You know, that talking when you've made a mistake or done something wrong, or when a negative state visits you, that kind of, that you're not sure what's going on, but you know something isn't right. And the ministers finish. King looks at him, off with his head. And the fellow, our hero, says, "Sir, please don't do that. Because I did get better. Can't you see I got better? It was 2 full weeks, and I hardly said a despairing word. I was out with the deer and the antelope playing." And he says, "Besides which, the reason that happened was because I had banked on certain things taking place. I was going to be able to move into my business in a proper amount of time, and then I'd get things going, and I was going to take care of the people. You knew I was going to do that. If you're a king, you knew it." He's talking. And the king looks at him and says, "Sentence stayed." Man's transported instantaneously back into his life, where he does this over and over and over again.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
Every false step he makes, every social blunder that happens, every dream that passes through his mind that drags him into a relationship that isn't working out, on, and every single time, guards appear, transported back to the hall. King says, off with his head. Every time he pleads for his life, says, "Not this time. You'll see. I'm getting it better. It's more refined. It's going to work out. I promise. And every time, King says, "Oh, you're set and stayed." And off he goes back into his life. Does that sound familiar at all to you? It ought to. It's a form of purgatory. It's a form of purgatory. Why is it? Some of you are going to really think you hear chalk on a blackboard right now. Why is it purgatorious? I don't know if that's a word or not. Why is that purgatory? Because I live endlessly under the threat of the king taking my head. Everything is life and death. Make a mistake, and I know. Now, let's bring us into the story. Make a mistake, and I know I'm going to have to sit there in this hall, the space between my ears, and I'm going to talk to myself about why it went down the way it did, who was responsible for it turning out like it did, bringing in all the elements of the past in order to procure a solid protective device that I can be safe in, and then beg, meaning what? Think about, well, I'll do better. I'm going to be better. You'll see. And you don't even know that that's going on relative to talking to yourself. There's always the negotiation. Always that which needs to just be tweaked a little bit in the mind so that when it's tweaked this time, it'll be okay next time. And every next time, there's always the fall. Isn't there always the fall? Has anybody here not visited that hall where the king meeting, where isn't it the threat of death? Have you ever been under the threat of death? You know what I'm talking about. It's not worth it. What, look at what, I have nothing. This wipes out everything. Have you ever had everything wiped out? You know what I'm talking about. Somebody says something to you. Are you not transported to torment? A plan goes bad. Are you not transported to pain? And every time before the torment, every time before the pain, every time before the worry, and the pain and the worry and the torment speak to you as they do and ask you who you are and how it got to be like that. And what are you going to do about it? There is always the response from something inside of you that gives you a way to do what? To save yourself. Always the way to save ourselves. Haven't you heard that? And here's the point. What good is saving yourself? If all I gain by saving myself is the next moment where I'm back and have to save myself again, doesn't that get a little old? Doesn't it? So our hero, and God willing, we shall all be spiritual heroes instead of spiritual zeros, as Mr. Howard used to call them. One day the man who was out there doing his stuff, increasingly looking over his shoulder because he just couldn't take it anymore. And because the pressure grew, and try to see this because it's so beautiful in terms of the dynamic, the more the pressure grows for the fear of something, the more the fear will betray you into that act that actually makes you the perpetrator of the thing you don't want to do. Have you noticed that? Not wanting to do something, not wanting to be something because of the fear of it taking place creates such a pressure that eventually it causes a trip lever and boom, you do it. How many of you ever wanted to be not a, I said, I'm going to be a nice person for the rest of my life. Finally, you can't take the pressure. And then you're not a nice person. And what happens when you're not a nice person? Back in the hall for most people. King says, off with your head. And that's what happened. Sitting there, in comes a negative state into our hero, transported instantaneously back to the hall. The king looks at him and says, off with your head. And something happens to him that has to happen to you. And he looks at the king and he says, why am I here? And the king looks at him, and the man says, because I can't please you, I'm sentenced to death? Because I can't please you, I'm sentenced to death, and unless I please you, which I can't, next time, unless I can't, then the sentence is carried out? Do you understand what I'm saying? The man is saying to the king, all you do is tell me that my life hangs in the balance of every act that I make. And every mistake I make, every time I fall down, all you can do is tell me off with my head. And then when I beg my way out of it, you say, okay. And all I get then is to go into a situation where I'm not going to be able to please you there either. And he looked at him, at the king, and he said, you are not the true king. You are an imposter. And better you should slay me now than I serve you for another minute. Do it. And in that instant, our hero was transported. But not back into his life. In that moment, our hero was brought into a world that had always existed right within the very world that he was a worried wreck in, but that has nothing to do with that world itself. And I'll explain that in a minute when I finish tying up the story. The one who talks to himself or herself about their pain talks to a false god. And is at that moment the very voice of the false god that he or she is talking to. Fear, hatred, worry, negativity. It only exists as a compromising force to the soul that incorporates it. It only exists in time. What's wrong with negativity isn't the negativity itself. Negativity is a natural force. Where it goes wrong is in the human being asleep to himself. The negativity awakens in the individual the necessary image in that individual's mind that allows that negativity to become incorporated, to be brought into a manifestation. In other words, negativity as a natural passive force is turned into a particular power, is turned into something of a form. And when it's made like that, it doesn't pass. It can't change. Nothing can happen other than the individual who has created that dark alchemy in himself, that mind that has created. All that can happen is the person then becomes further and further identified with those forms. Now, I know that what I just said maybe isn't clear, so I'm going to explain it for you a little more simply. When you make the mistake, when the negativity comes, when the fear passes through you, when that state pops in like that, its presence alone has no power. The thought, oh my God, what did I do? The reaction itself has no power. Where the power comes that turns into the pain, meaning the threat of the loss of your life, is when that negative state is met by your time nature, your past. Because in that moment, the thing that is a natural part of an eternity, a natural part of a continual flux, a natural movement, a natural flow, in the moment that it comes into the human being, or the human being stirs it in himself, in that split second, that which is a flow becomes an unflow. The river turns into ice, to use words. And then the person begins to know himself through that. And to say it in terms of the talk, then he or she begins to try to save themselves from that king.
Here, Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks 4 times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
Here's the principal misunderstanding. Take a deep breath. Each and every one of us believes that we are separate from what is punishing us. See, the man in the story, the king was a power to him because he believed that the king was something outside of himself. That which says off with, certainly I would never say off with my own head. That would be ludicrous, wouldn't it? How many of you understand? That would be ludicrous. And yet, in the moment where something goes wrong or there's a problem or you're visited by a painful thought, in such moments, you tell yourself you're a goner. You tell yourself all there is that. And what we're saying here is that in the moment where that takes place interiorly, there is an illusion. And the illusion is that I am different from what is punishing me. I'm different from what is sentencing me. And I'm not different from what is sentencing me. Which is why the only way to ever understand the wholeness of that is to not speak to it. See, I told you 2 stories. One from 2,000 years ago about a man who absolutely refused to explain truth. And then I told you a fanciful story about a man who says to this king, "You're not a king. Not only are you not a king, but I'm done talking to you the way I've been talking to you. You want to do what you want to do? Do it to me." That wasn't that what Christ... Christ said, "Do what you're going to do." Then, by the way, he did say a certain explanation. He said, because you wouldn't have this power unless it was given to you. Which is another idea that needs to be discussed. Why? Because in the grand scale of things, in the instance of this rather relatively, you know, universal event, how would that light, the love of it, the fearlessness of it, how would that ever be known if it weren't in giving itself to the darkness that did with it what it thought it had to do? So that here we are in time, 2,000 years later, physically speaking, looking at a principle to try to see where that principle actually is a power inside of ourselves that we need to understand if we're going to be different. And when the hero of our story said, look, I'm not serving you. You want to slay me? Slay me. I'm not serving you another day. What was he saying? I am officially serving you. Notice that I'm the relationship we've had is not the same relationship anymore. Period. So you do what you have to do. Now, what does that break down to for us? It means we have to stop. No. It means we have to see that we've never saved ourselves. Not once. Even though we can all look back in our lives and see where we did the two-step and came out on top for a minute. Not once. Not once have you ever saved yourself. What you have done, what all of us have done, is merely postpone another transportation into the hall of torment where we sing and dance and then sent away again to come back again. Which means further that the only way that what torments us can be answered is with no answer at all. That is the only way. No energy. No consideration. No maybe. No dialogue. Nothing except pure attention to it. Why pure attention? Because in pure attention, the whole trail of this tears, the whole trail of this time and the tears that it has generated, it's there. I have been here 1,000 times before you. Meaning before my own mind. Haven't you? You tell me how many times you have had a silent negotiation, or sometimes not so silent. And you sit there and all that whispering going on and the justification and the defense and the prosecutor and all that going, and then finally off with your head. No, please don't take my head. I'll be better. I'll do different. And some of you, this is what you do. Please don't do that. I'll just disappear. You'll see I won't be any trouble. I'll just go and become a sad person. One day, by the grace of God, and I hope it happens to you, you're there before the king, the dark king, and you look at it, you say, you know what, I've been serving you, I have really been serving you my whole life. That's so obvious. Anytime there's something, I'm brought before you, and every time I'm brought before you, it's under the threat of death. Sometimes there's big death and little death. You understand, like little death and big death here? You know, in other words, sometimes off with your head just means it's not going to work out and you're going to have to do something else. Other time, off with your head means the whole thing just came to crash. That's it. Done. I'm over with. Nothing left. And instead of serving the king, you can serve your remembrance of that whole process. You can do the thing that has to be done, which is, and this is the whole point of the talk, is that you can bring the two false gods together. Now, what does it mean, the two false gods? Is not the king certainly a false god? Yes, anything in the mind that threatens you with hell, anything that tells you life is terrible, that there's no point to it, certainly that's a false god. Now, do you understand that just by the fact that you're in front of it and afraid of it, you've given it power. You believe it has power. Just by the fact that you're there talking to it, trying to appease it, you believe it has power. You can say you don't believe that, your actions dictate otherwise. So there's one false god. What's the other false god? The you that figures out how to escape it. The you that figures out how you can dance around and appease a false god is an extension of the false god you appease. There can't be any other explanation of it. How many of you can see that at all? Now, the thing that's difficult and extraordinary is that when I'm the one appeasing the false god, meaning I'm going to work it out, I'm going to change, I've got a future. And in that future, it's bright. So therefore, I am the God of light when I'm standing before the God of darkness. Because I see what has to be done. I know what's necessary. I know where I was wrong. Please don't punish me. I'll never do it again. And you standing there are sitting in front of and basing every action, every thought is an expression of a resistance to the Dark King. Every answer to the Dark King is generated by the Dark King inside of a human being. Every answer to it. So here are the opposites that are unseen in us. The me that represents the light that won't do the dark thing again, but the me that's the light that won't do the dark thing again didn't exist until I was brought before the king and told off with his head. Classic opposites. And that light that we take ourselves to be when we're going to save ourselves from the Dark King and the Dark King we're going to save ourselves from are not two things. They are one self divided, one mind acting against itself without knowing that it's doing that. And more important is that that mind can only keep that person in that purgatory as long as the person doesn't know the truth of that. And the minute that one suspects that voyage back and forth, that transportation from here to there to hell and back to heaven planned by myself again is all one play, that's the beginning of the end of it. Why? Because just like what Christ did and just like we're intended to do, I simply stop answering when I'm brought there. And when I stop answering why I'm brought there, instead of being the false light, I'm bringing the light with me into that moment. Because now I see the false light and I see the false darkness at the same time. How many of you understand that? Instead of, here, when I'm the false light, there's just me in the darkness. There's just me and my plans to escape it. But if I understand that these two opposites exist unseen inside of myself as one antagonist presenting itself as a hero and the herder, then I can see clearly that's the end of that relationship, and then there is my awareness of the light and my awareness of the darkness. And in the awareness of these opposites have no power. Not only do they have no power, but listen to this. I am then standing in my Father's kingdom. My true Father's kingdom. I'm now standing in what is timeless. Is not awareness of time, does it not have to be timeless? Not thinking about time, aware of how the time is being created inside of myself. And is that not time? Oh no, the past. Oh yes, the future. And the me that's going to make that trip. Don't answer the Dark King. If you don't, even if you'll just work to not do that, that very understanding of that moment will present to you an awareness of yourself as you are in your present state. And it is that awareness of your present state that produces the possibility and eventually the fulfillment of that which is always superior to darkness, meaning that which changes, transforms the darkness. Then you can fulfill your task on this planet, as is all of our task, is to be that light working in the darkness through it to change the whole of the world.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.